Yourself and what you do.
Mbangi Seni Mfumbata.
policy and regulation focusing on water resources management.
Thank you, ma'am, for your indulgence. You've already indicated you are given the program. Hilhard Muller will start with the presentation on the key issues to which we highlighted: high-level equity principle, water allocation priorities, and water footprint. And then Deborah, who's already been introduced, will talk on in detail on equity and water allocation and also regulation. And after that, we've got institutions and governance, which is Togo Sikwaza. There's also the research, which is done information on infrastructure and research. Mbangi will do that. Skills and capacity building, Petunia will cover that. That's the, and then you've got media and communication. Temba will cover that. And the water and infrastructure investment that we can sail at the end. That's the order wish to follow, ma'am, and hopefully that will fit within the time frame. Thank you.
Over to you, Mr.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. My presentation are just a few issues that...
Sorry. My presentation covers a few issues that are not specifically mentioned in the other presentations, like the water footprint, but I also will touch on high-level equity principles, and then Deborah and her presentation will go into more detail. I thought it's important that we just highlight this to members of the committee. Members have got the right page. This is slide 59, and this refers to page 22 and 23 of the summary of the document, where it is talked about, because as you remember last week, Fred Van Zyl in his presentation highlighted that equity is the first core principle. So in order to discuss this further, I just want to highlight these issues, and as I said, Deborah will talk about it further later. Okay, there are three... when we talk about equity, as said in the white paper on national water policy in 97, equity, want to distinguish between three equity principles. The first is equity and access to water services. The second one is equity and access to water resources. And the third one is equity and access to the benefits from a water resource. Apologies for that. Equity in access to water services goes back to the Constitution. We talk to access to sufficient water, and then we have the Water Services Act, Act 108 of 97, and also regulations in terms of Section 9 that define the quantity, the quality, and assurance of supply, etc. We all know we made impressive progress on national scale to provide access to basic services. But that has been a, but you also know that in some rural areas there's still substantial backlogs. Also in informal settlements and in poor O&M means that some people have got taps but no water. But then but the linkage between access to water services and a national water resource strategy is that sustainable water resources are needed to ensure equity in access to water services. You can't have access to water services as municipal service without sustainable water resources. And that's the important linkages with this strategy. Equity in access to water resources means that the concept of water, of direct access to water for productive use, such as water for irrigation, business, or an industry. And so this must address in this strategy. strategy. We must address the equity in water allocation, address job creation, contribute to poverty eradication. And Deborah will talk a lot about this principle of access to water resources. But what we must realize is not practical or possible to divide South African water resources to give every South African equal amount of raw water. Water services, every one of us has got the entitlement to access to basic to water services, but the same doesn't apply to water resources. And then the third principle is equity in access to the benefits from the use of water resources. That means the public sharing in the benefits of water being used by other sectors, for example, the energy sector. Energy sector use 2% of water, but contributes 50% to the GDP, and all of us can share, we've got benefits of electricity, can share in the benefits of access to water resources. And then that other principle also share through taxes. Okay, then the other principle that is mentioned in the National Water Resource Strategy is the issue of water footprint. There's a lot of talk about water footprint. And I think this title is not, apologies for this, the title of this slide is not correct. This title of this slide should read water allocation priorities. In that you'll find in the document, there's a section dealing with water allocation priorities. The first one priority is what is the first priority in the way that we allocate water? Is the reserve, basic human environment. The second one is shared river basins. We've got international rivers, international agreements with six neighboring countries. So we must share those, we must comply with these international agreements. And then water for poverty eradication, and number four, water for strategic water use, and then water for the rest. These principles are captured in the draft strategy as water allocation priorities. I apologize again, Madam Chair, for the title of this slide. Now, I'll just briefly touch on the water footprint. The concept of a water neutral footprint is receiving attention locally and internationally, but it does not mean that no water is used by a water user, but rather that water consumed is done so as efficiently as possible. And where further water efficiency gains cannot be achieved, the negative impact of that is offset by that user, mitigating other water users' inefficiencies. And I'll come back in detail about that. This slide tries to explain, you will not find it in the document, but I added this slide to try to explain the issue of offsetting. On the outer, the bigger picture there is the original water footprint. Say you've got a company, that is their water footprint. That is the water they use for the production of a product. The dark blue right in the middle is where they want to be as an ideal state to use that water. Then through savings within their company, they can get to that second circle, the light blue. Say, for example, they can spend $10 million and they can move to that second block. But to go to the dark blue, they would need, say, $100 million for the optimum efficiency. But they could rather say, instead of moving, spend that other $90 million to get to the dark blue, they would rather help a municipality to improve their water efficiency in the same catchment. So that's what the principle of offsetting is. It means that a company may say that instead of spending another $90 million, we rather help and spend $40 million in the municipality and improve their water efficiency. So that's what the principle of offsetting is means. And this is a kind of principle that has been discussed in the industry. Some companies have discussed with the department and the minister, and these are the principles that can be taken forward when you talk about offsetting. So there are two key activities in achieving a water neutral footprint. The first one is in saving, is how to reduce the impact of water consuming activities, and then secondly, offsetting, which means investment in water conservation of other measures to offset the adverse environmental and social consequences that cannot be reduced further. That means actually a change of the benefits. This is actually the slide that I showed before with the right title, Madam Chair. Allocation priorities, and you'll find it on page 29 of the summary. As I said before, these are the priorities for allocation that we as proposed in the draft strategy. I think that's the end of my contribution. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I will allow members to, if you've got anything to say, you must say it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to go back to the slide of the offsetting, and I'd like to know if you have any examples where this has been implemented or done successfully, because my experience with municipalities at municipalities basically is that the companies and businesses, they always want the municipality to do exactly that instead of putting their hands in their pockets. So I'd like to know success stories of where are they and how much have the business actually contributed improving the supply at municipalities.
That on equity in access to water services, the slide that talks about the backlogs in remote rural and farmer settlements, if there are strategies for improvement, to improve the situation here to attend to the backlogs, and also if we do have capacity to deal with it.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to get a sense on the principle of equity when we talk about water service and water resource and benefits thereof. Can I get a sense on the strategy that will apply to make sure that we come nearer to what is stated by the Constitution of the country, particularly for the people in the rural areas? Because the most people who are suffering on this matter are those who are in the rural areas, and they are stricken by poverty. What strategy or means do we have on place to make sure that we bring them near or we address this issue? And so I must say, it's almost 18 years talking about these issues, especially on the issue of poverty, eradication, and so on. But we must try to move faster. Can I get a sense on the plans that we have done?
Thanks, Madam Chair. May I have another question, please? The infrastructure, where the infrastructure is in, but there is no water that is coming through. Do you have a database of those areas?
Thank you, members. Did you?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. I'll just ask Hilchat to deal with those areas. A number of these will be covered in the detailed presentations to follow. Even the very last one, what is called infrastructure without water, we call it what's the term we normally use now? That's the functionality. Yeah, that's the basic. It will be covered in detail later. So, and the other one, if I can respond, that constitutional imperative to reach the very marginalized and poor in rural areas. Again, there are programs that are meant will become more and more clearer. We've been having discussions with the National Treasury and COOCTA how we can reach that grouping, which forms about 4.3 of the percentage. We say 94.7 access, and in that 94.7, there's those which are non-functional, which is the question referring to. But there is a group, a small percentage, but significant, in the world, which has never been reached. So we're coming with what we call the interim provision. If municipalities, let's say, are
some few years behind. We're saying that instead of waiting for those what is it that you can provide at the most basic level, if it even doesn't reach the high level standards. Those things are also being prioritized, and we're with Treasury and COOCTA last week, and they've combined resources from ourselves and COOCTA will ensure that within the next 2 years, that's the plan, that all the areas which have never been reached are reached. But of course, it's the functionality. Once you've provided that, because this is an ever-increasing backlog as well, if what has already been provided is not well looked after in terms of O&M, then you're back to the backlog increases, you never reach the target. But I just wanted to touch on those, but and others, as I say, will follow in the detailed presentation. Hilhat, thanks.
Madam Chair, thanks. As the Director General has said, when Debra talk about equity, I think that more detail will be provided on Mrs. Kosana's question. So if with your permission, we can wait until Debra has finished her presentation. Mrs. Wenger, on your question about offsetting, there is no practical example yet. These are just principles being discussed within the sector and with the Department of Proposal. But you are quite right. When we had discussions with the private sector, we said it shouldn't just be a once-off support. It should be an ongoing, sustainable process for offsetting.
Able to actually get them on board in order to buy into the offsetting. So I think maybe we need to look at, because if they were not interested, I mean, the other companies are smaller than that, how are we going to encourage or offset and provide incentives in order for these companies to be interested in buying into that proposal?
Madam Chair, can I say that we would like to have details of that specific case, because these are just currently still principles to draft the policy, and we also have to regulate this. If I can have details of that case, it can also help us in going forward to define our policies and refine our policies. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I just want to propose, because some of the questions are referred to what we are going to get. I would like to give the department to present so that all of them, so that we ask questions, so that we must have enough time to digest what they are presenting to us. If that's fine with you, members. The next.
Thank you, Chair. We'll take them in the order of the indicated. Deborah, you can start.
So, Sia Kuamkela Mazi.
Good morning again, honorable members. Okay. Can I continue? Once again, I am Deborah Mochotli. I'm from the Department of Water Affairs. I am going to be presenting on equity, thereafter on regulation. The format of the presentation is such that we give the objectives. Why is it important for us to be delivering on that function? And then we give the status quo, which is a bit of a situation analysis, and then we indicate the way forward. The objectives of water, of equity in water allocation, is to give effect to the equity principle, redressing the past imbalances in race and gender, contributing to broad-based black economic empowerment, enhancing capacity development. During the process of equity or compulsory licensing, we identify productive areas of productive use of water or projects for productive use of water, and in the process there is capacity building. Supporting local, provincial, and national planning initiatives, we facilitate a fair, reasonable, and consistent allocation. We also contribute towards the achievement of development objectives. To have meaningful transformation in water use, we support poverty eradication and economic development. We help the balance the resource protection, equity, and growth. What is the situation like currently? We still have large quantities of water in the hands of non-HDIs. Most applications that we receive as a department are from non-HDIs. And most of these applications do not indicate as to how should the water use be authorized, how they are going to contribute to redress and equity. We have a situation where allocable water is getting depleted without having achieved equity in allocations. There are difficulties experienced by HDIs in using water for productive purposes. And I must explain here, just to elaborate on what HealthHub has already indicated. This equity that we are talking about is equity on raw water. It is equity for productive use. It is not necessarily for water services or for basic use. Trading of water does not necessarily contribute to equity. We have a situation where non-HDIs who had authorization to a large amount of large volumes of water are trading this water, and the trading is happening amongst themselves without bullet number two indicating how that is going to contribute to redress and equity. The leniency of the legislation towards the status quo, in other words, being very, very difficult for us to actually achieve equity. What is the strategy going forward? How are we going to achieve equity in water allocation? We have the water allocation reform strategy. It proposes strategic mechanisms to achieve the set targets. We'll get to the targets later. The strategy, one of the mechanisms is, some of the mechanisms are the set-asides, general authorizations, strategic alignment with other national initiatives, compulsory licensing, partnerships, review. The intention is to review the current strategy. The targets as indicated or as set out in the water allocation reform strategy are like this. Remember I said that we are intending to review the strategy. The national target in respect of blacks, we are intending to achieve 30% in 2014, 45% in 2019, 20% in 2024. The national targets in respect of women, 2014 is 30%, 2019 is 40%, 2024 is 50%. Now these targets these targets were not just arbitrarily arrived at. We looked at the land reform project and looked at those projects that seemed to promise success and said if we were to align ourselves with those targets, then it would take us somewhere. And I need to indicate that currently we have compulsory licensing as one of the mechanisms. Go back to the former slide, which has the mechanisms here. Bullet 3 from the bottom, compulsory licensing. It is a lengthy process. It's very it's resource intensive, and it is expensive. We are currently dealing with the first three water management areas or catchments with Young Diesel, Tosca, Musatusi. In Tosca, we have finalized a compulsory licensing there. We are busy with Musatusi and Young Diesel with the hope of finalizing that by next year. In those catchments, we have achieved those targets. The Tosca one, as I said, is already done. We have achieved the 30%. In Young Diesel and Musatusi, we have already... In Young Diesel, we will be gazetting the proposed allocation by end of September. And the proposed allocation, it, there are indications that we will achieve the 30%. Musatusi, we have already gazetted. And the proposed allocation as it stands also indicates that we will achieve the 30% in that area. I need to indicate that, the success of this program is dependent largely on collaboration with other sectors. So we are trying very hard to align ourselves with the mining charter, the other industry, and the agricultural sector, because if we allocate water and these other sectors do not come on board, it will be water that we look at and not water that we use for productive use. This is the end of the equity presentation. Chair, do I continue to regulation now? The presentation on regulation also takes the same form, where we indicate why or the objective of regulation. We indicate the status quo. We indicate what it is that we are going to do going forward and what goes along. Now, regulation here, we are talking about regulation of the entire value chain. We are talking about the water resources and water services regulation as well. Now, here we want to ensure the protection, the use, the development, conservation, management, and control of water resources. The guiding principles that are in the National Water Act of Sustainability and Equity are recognize the basic human needs of present and future generations, the need to protect water resources, the need to share some water resources with other countries, the need to promote social and economic development through the use of water, to ensure the protection of the health and the interest of the citizen. That's more on the water services. To ensure the protection of citizens' rights to basic water services, to realize the above, that is the protection of water resources and the protection of the citizens, the regulatory functions entails authorization of water use, compliance and monitoring, and enforcement. What are the drivers of regulation? In water resources, we know that RSA, or our country, is rated as the water scarce. Thus, we need, as water scarce, thus we need to protect the resource from threats such as over-abstraction, discharges that are not compliant with the set standards that relate to the quality of water, unlawful water use, etc. In water services, the drivers are the need to protect the health and the interests of citizens, as I've already mentioned. We have the need to protect the citizens' rights to basic water services. And now the members, you will remember that we really are not providers of water services, but we have a mandate of regulating the providers. Increased demand for water services due to, among others, the population growth, migration from rural to cities. So if we have a number of people coming to cities, it means we also have to ensure that they also get their constitutional right to basic water services. Economic regulation, the protection of the interests of the consumers without compromising the sustainability of water services institutions. We are ensuring that tariffs throughout the value chain are fair to all citizens. In other words, are equitable, not equal, but equitable, affordable, in other words, viable, and ensuring economically effective and efficient use of resources, and allow for continuity of service, sustainability. The situation analysis in drinking water or drinking water quality. When we compare the first blue drop to the 2012 blue drop report on the national microbiological compliance of the South African tap water measured against the national standard SAN 241, there's indication of improvement of the water quality. Wastewater, we are talking there about, or we are referring to the wastewater treatment works. There's an improvement in that there is reduced risk rating. This that I'm talking about, you'll be able to confirm when you look at the blue drop and the green drop reports. On water resources, we've got increased reports of unlawful water use. We don't know whether it is there's increase in unlawful water use or there's increase in awareness that people are reporting. Increased application of water use authorization. Now, this increase for water use authorization can be seen as positive, but it can also be seen as somehow negative. The positive side is that it could indicate that there's economic development. The downside perhaps could be that the depletion of water resources. But what it also means is that there's increased need for compliance monitoring enforcement, which results in increased need for regulation function or regulatory function. Capacity constraints in dealing with the demand for increased regulatory function, I don't think that one needs unpacking. What is our strategy going forward? How to? We are strengthening and continuously improving water services regulation by, for example, the regulatory performance measurement system, incentive-based regulation, the conscious use of rewards as well as penalties to encourage performance and continuous improvement. We also have targeted risk-based regulation. Now, the risk-based regulation allows the institution to identify and prioritize the critical risk areas within its water and wastewater management and to take corrective measures to abate these. Risk analysis is used by the regulator to identify, quantify, and manage the corresponding risks according to their potential impact on the water resource and to ensure a prioritized and targeted regulation. Still on the strategy going forward, we want to prioritize geographic areas and sectors. This you can link with the capacity constraints that I've already alluded to. So the priorities would be on stretched water management areas. For example, in Mpumalanga, and the sector there would be the mining sector. In the Vaal area as well, where there's threat to water quality, the sector there is irrigation. There's a threat to water quality, and then there's unlawful water use around that area. What we also want to do within the department is to separate support from regulation. You cannot come today to say, I have come to check whether you are compliant, and then on the other hand, the support. So in cases where support is needed, for example, in 80 municipalities, within the department, we refer that to the support unit of the department. And the support unit of the department, as you might be aware, is supported also by the rapid response unit, so that we are not seen to be coming with a stick and nothing to support. In fact, we are reminded from time to time that it's a constitutional mandate that we support local local government or municipalities. We also want to have capacitated stakeholders, awareness campaigns, where we are hoping that with awareness campaigns, we will actually be aware of our global water use before it gets entrenched or threatens the resource. We want to strengthen the role of civil society during these awareness campaigns. Other measures, interdepartmental collaboration. In here I can explain that we have a project with that is led by the Minister and the Minister of Minerals, where they are insisting that we work together as departments. So we are looking at how we can do authorization together, how we can do enforcement, compliance monitoring together. We are already doing joint investigations with law enforcement agencies. We are strengthening the compliance and enforcement unit. We were hoping by now to have had a project where we would have appointed graduates and training them on regulation so that we increase in number and also in skills, the competence. We want to target specific problem areas. I've already alluded to that and made some examples. We also want to promote self-regulation. Self-regulation here, we are talking about sectors regulating themselves such that it will reduce the unlawful use of water, such that it will reduce to an extent the burden from the department. We want to entrench the principles of regulation. We also want to develop regulatory tools. And that ends my presentation on the regulatory function of the department.
Thank you, Chair. Still continue on your mandate to present all, but I'll be guided and stop by you if at any stage you feel that you want to open up.
Yes.
With that permission, then, Chair, the next is the institution and governance, which will be done by Togo Skwasa, will be followed by information and resources and research by Bandi. And then skills later, and capacity building, and then media and communication, and then water infrastructure.
With your permission, I would like to present from here. Okay. Chair, this is the chapter that is summarizing what we are going to do in terms of developing sustainable institutions over the coming 5 years and beyond. In the edited, the first version, it was on page 85 of the National Water Resource Strategy, so we are revising that chapter. Chair, this topic is very huge, but only for today we have been given 15 minutes and we are only having about 8 pages, so we are just going to give you the taste of what is in the bigger document. So it's just a summary of what you will find in the document. And since we have appeared before the Portfolio Committee also in May this year, with all the entities, I think a lot of issues are still the same as we discussed previously. I think the main issue for us is that there is currently an ineffective arrangement of water sector institutions. So we would like within the next 5 years and beyond to see institutions that are effective, that are sustainable, that are well organized, that have clear roles and responsibilities and their mandates. And as you can see from the slide that is projected, currently there are about 97 entities that are reporting to the minister, and some of them, the irrigation board, the 169, we are still in the process of transforming them so that we can regulate them under the National Water Act. We have TCTA, we have Water Research Commission, we have 2 catchment management agencies, we have 79 water users associations, we have 12 water boards, and we have 169 irrigation boards. And in terms of the other institutions, the water services authorities, although they are not directly accountable to the minister, but in terms of regulation, Deborah has touched on them, the minister still needs to regulate the 156 water services authorities. So it indicates the scale and the volume of the work in terms of overseeing the institution. We also have the international transboundary institutions that are looking at transboundary water resource management issues that are also listed in the diagram. So in terms of the vision, we have laid out the vision and objectives of what we want to see in the coming years. I think in order for us to have sustainable water sector institutions that will facilitate effective service delivery, we are a chapter that is supporting the other core strategies. So we are part of enabling and ensuring that there is capacity on the ground to implement the core strategy. The first thing that we are talking about is the overall trusteeship of the entire water value chain. Currently, the National Water Act talks about the minister being the trustee of the national water resources. But the minister has spoke mainly about the issue of looking at the entire water value chain, because we know that once things are not going well at a municipal level, she is still held accountability. But we are saying it's overall trusteeship while we recognize the constitutional mandate of local government. We are also looking at the department as an institution, and will say that it will continue to set policy, to do regulation, and also to provide support to water management and water services institution. We also want within the next 5 years to sort out issues related to the management of the national water resource infrastructure, and to ensure that we have an optimal institution that is managing national water resource infrastructure in the country. We know that currently we have the department involved in the development and maintenance of infrastructure. We also have TCTA, which is responsible for the financing and also development. So we're trying to sort out so that we align both institutions. The other critical issue that we want to do in the coming years is the issue of the regional bulk infrastructure, to make sure that we consolidate existing water boards so that there is economies of scale, and the marginal and poor and financially non-viable water boards are aligned with others in order to ensure that there is economies of scale. The catchment management agencies, the minister has already approved the establishment of 9 catchment management agencies, and we have gazetted the new water management areas and in 20th of July, and by mid-October we should be finalizing that consultation process. And in terms of water users associations, they are a critical block in terms of water resource management in the water management area, so we are promoting that we should continue utilizing them in terms of local water resource infrastructure for the users, and also to ensure that they do local water resource management functions. The development in terms of the 4 international river basins, we are going to promote the issue of transboundary water management institutions, of which there will be 4 that are managing those relationships at an international level. The water research information and knowledge management, DDG Mbangi will be talking more about that one, but in terms of the institutions, we have looked at them during the alignment. And the main thing is to strengthen their capacity for research information and knowledge management, and to make sure that we have a sustainable service in terms of research and knowledge in the sector. We have also mooted the issues around economic reforms and pricing, and we are exploring to establish economic regulation by 2014. It is in the Minister's Performance Agreement, and there is a project that is looking in terms of what form will this economic regulation take, because, I won't go too far, but we are exploring. So the future in terms of what we are putting in the National Water Resource Strategy is the future of institutional arrangements in South Africa. We will be having less than 96 institutions reporting to minister, and we will have about 10 water users associations, which have infrastructure of significance, and that will continue, or which have loans that are attached to them. But other water users associations will be reporting directly to the catchment management agencies, so that we align institutions at a local level. I think the water management areas that have been gazetted, which are on the consultation, we have presented them before to the portfolio committee, and they are listed in the map. I think the key one is that the VAL is now integrated into one system, so we are looking at the VAL from the upper, the middle, and the lower VAL as one water management area. And the others, the Limpopo, Olifants, we have spoken about them in the past. In terms of the concept of managing water resources at a local level, I think we have presented it before to portfolio committee, and also the need of catchment management agencies. So it's just a reminder that CMAs are critical in terms of water resource management, and also to ensure that there is local community participation in water resource management. So I think I have already said that the 9 water management areas have been gazetted for public consultation on the 20th of July for 90 days. And the following are the names of the water management areas. In terms of the national water resource infrastructure, this is a critical one that we need to finalize within the 5 years, which is looking at aligning national water resource infrastructure between the department and also the TCTA, and also to look at the issues of financing projects off budget and also the investment through water use charges. That is going to be covered under the review of the pricing strategy that we have also currently started. And I think we are familiar with the issues around the financial management of the water trading entity. They will form part of the aligning of the National Water Resource Infrastructure Institution. To that effect, a draft business case has been developed for the creation of an optimal institutional model, and we will come back to the portfolio committee when recommendations have been made as to what type of an offer model we are looking for. In terms of the water users association, managing local water infrastructure at a local level, I think the key area there, the key challenge is mainly the slow transformation of irrigation boards, and which has really delayed us in the establishment of water users associations. But we are continuing with the development and establishment of new water user associations that are of developmental nature, and also the issue of financial and technical resources to support the new emerging water users association. In terms of our commitment of what we are going to do in the new National Water Resource Strategy, we are committing ourselves that we will be involved in the transformation within 12 months for the irrigation board in order to bring them within the ambit of the National Water Act, because currently they are governed by the 1956 Act. That will also form part of the amendment of the National Water Act so that we are able to align them. We have also introduced a transformation scorecard working with AgriSA in order to ensure that they are with us in terms of the transformation of irrigation boards. The issue of regulation and establishment and accountability, we are proposing that we must follow a differentiation approach to regulation of irrigation boards, so that those that are very small, they don't need really to prepare business plans, because some of them are very small and it's really a lot for them to, if you want to enforce that, they should all present business plans to the minister. So we are saying that those which are very small and developmental in nature, we will follow a differentiated approach to regulation. And the water users with government water schemes and state loans, those can be regulated by the department. And the establishment and accountability of water user associations will be done at the catchment management agency level to allow the CMA to be able to have oversight and responsibility of institutions below them. We are also saying that there is a need for effective support for the establishment of resource-poor farmers as water users associations. And the department is going to drive a support program on resource poor farmers with rural and land affairs and agriculture, because this issue requires a lot of partnership between us and land affairs and agriculture. With regard to water boards, there has been a lot of discussions, I think, between us and also with the portfolio committee. We have finalized our thinking around this issue. As number one, we want to address underperforming and marginal water boards through consolidation. Number two, we want to address gaps in regional infrastructure provision through expansion. And we also want to improve management of water resource infrastructure by ensuring that water resource assets at regional level are also managed by regional entities. We also want to ensure strong, financially viable regional institutions that can access financial markets to raise finance for investment. So if you look at the criteria of what we call a water board, you will realize that currently some water boards do not fit that criteria. So some water boards do not have the capacity to go to the market and borrow. So we are saying that if a water board does not fit that criteria, it's not going to be a water board. We will find something for it, or it will be consolidated with another water board so that it has the capacity at a regional scale to be able to support even municipality. I think those are the in discussions with the minister. In principle, she is supporting of us as phase one to move from 12 water boards to 9 water boards. And so those are the new proposed boundaries of the 9 water boards. But we are still, in terms of the legislation, we still need to consult the political heads of the provinces. So this is why at this stage we are not revealing the names of those that are being consolidated, because the minister still needs to formally engage with the heads of those affected water boards. In terms of the Water Research Commission, I think the main issue that has come out around this one is the coordination of water research in South Africa, because there are various other entities doing water research, like the mines and other and CSIR and other and other various entities. But what we have proposed is to have a national water research plan, which will be introduced and led by the department in conjunction with the Water Research Commission, so that we can have one plan for coordinating water research in South Africa. And also in terms of the legislative review, the review of the Water Research Act of 1971 has been started, and it should be completed within 6 months. But Mr. Nefumbada can speak on that one. So in terms of our priorities, when you go to the revised document, looking at our chapter from page 85 in this one, you will see that in the new document we have put new priorities to fast-track the establishment of catchment management areas in priority catchments and delegate water resource management functions. We are hoping that within 3 to 5 years, we should have established the 9 catchment management agencies. We want to ensure the transformation of all irrigation boards into water user associations by 2014. Yes. And also to delegate local water resource management functions to water users associations that have capacity to perform these functions, and also to support establishment of new water users associations as vehicles for building capacity for emerging farmers. We also want to amalgamate current water boards into a reduced number of viable regional water boards, with phase one being moving from 12 water boards to 9, and we are still negotiating for the future within 5 years and beyond, where we think we will have about 3 water boards in South Africa. We also want to ensure effective management of the national water resource infrastructure, which will develop, manage, and operate our infrastructure through an appropriate institutional model, which means we need to make sure that the roles and responsibility of TCCA and the department are aligned, and we make a decision of what type of an entity can do the national water resource infrastructure. And we want to develop a comprehensive regulatory and oversight framework for the national water resource infrastructure to ensure efficient operation and financial sustainability. So although some of the things I'm mentioning here, but they will be implemented under Deborah's presentation, which is the home of regulation. Chair, in a nutshell, that was the taste of what is in the bigger document. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sokosigwaza. As you know, when you drive, when you see your car is running in a speed, you have to reduce the brakes and the speed. So I want to say to you, I wanted the honorable members to digest these two presentations, because the one of me, Tokosigwaza, is in the heart of my brother around here and honorable members. So over to you, honorable members.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I thought it was fascinating. Certainly the most detail we've got yet in the portfolio committee about the suggested institutional changes. Prior to this, as you quite correctly said, we presented before and suggested CMA changes, but it was interesting for the first time to get a presentation on the suggested water board changes. And I'm sure a lot of work has to be done there still. I'm interested in you talking us through what has to be done legally in order to, and I'm not interested in names, and I understand why you can't, but don't worry about that. What has to happen in order to amalgamate or close down, expand the footprint of water boards? And you mentioned the one thing was consultation with relevant premiers. I can see why that is relevant. But I'm interested in things like transfer of assets, consultation with mayors and municipal managers, and the like. The next question, and related to that, is besides the amalgamation of water boards, it seems to me that there's also an expansion of range of water board suggestions. So at the moment there's a footprint of water boards, and that's covered over 12 entities. You want to move it down to 9, but I've got a sense from that diagram that there are two processes at work. The other one is actually the possible expansion of range of operation of water boards. Just talk me through the process and legality of expanding the range. I mean, you've got presumably current water services authorities, which are effectively municipalities, who are providing water services in their jurisdiction. What happens? I mean, you've got a desire to increase some of the range. What is that interaction that happens between a existing water service authority and a water board that has been told to or wants to extend its range? I guess where I'm going is, can you compel an existing municipality to take on the services from a water board? So just, I'm just reading my information. I just want to go through. I want to just understand the constitutional provisions here and stipulations with regards to that. So is it a negotiation between the relevant municipality and the water board? Linked against my first question is, I think when I started on this committee, there were 14 water boards. Now there might have even been 15. Now they're 14. And now there's another 12. Best practice / capacity do you have as the regulator in order to actually manage the process? It's one thing obviously to have to gazette and for a minister to issue the necessary directives, but I do get a sense that there's going to be a necessary but heavy burden on you as the regulator as well in managing this particular process. I think that is sufficient for now. Chair, I might ask one or two more. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, we thank for the presentation from two presenters. Jefferson, we all agree that South Africa is a scarcity water country. But the water that is available in the public domain, we all agree that it needs a proper management. And in the past, we raised an issue of licensing for the irrigation purposes. And we referred to the farmers who are irrigating, and we needed a measurement of how does the department measure that water which is irrigating. And therefore, we echo this issue of licensing. Okay, can I be clarified, Chair? How far does the department gone in terms of issue of licensing? The strategy documentary is very good. And we have got sufficient information in terms of documentation. But practically on the ground, have you started? Are you going to start? Where are we in terms of the issue of licensing? And secondly, Chair, will South Africa look at guidelines to address fundamental questions about making their water footprints public, especially for businesses? What is the business case for water disclosure? What are the primary stakeholder interests in what disclosure does the National Water Resource Strategy engage on this? Can I also get a clarity? And another one, Chair, how does Department of Water Affairs determine indicators that can be used to monitor targets for water allocations reform and for prioritizing areas for specific water allocation reform interventions? Does the department also engage on this, Chair? Can I get a sense? I'll come back again, Chair.
Honorable, thank you, Chairperson. The piece that talks about situation analysis, there's no page number here. It says, what is the current situation like? The first bullet says, large quantities of water
still in the hands of the non-HDIs. And the last two bullets talk about treating of water does not necessarily contribute to equity. And the last bullet talking about leniency towards, status quo. For me, Chair, I think all areas talking about transformation have a huge challenge. And I don't actually see this as leniency, but I think it's some form of resistance towards a transformation. People do not want to transform. They're just happy about the status quo. And those who are, you know, empowered to deal with licensing, how do they approve the licensing if the situation is like this? Because I think the transformation policy has been there for a very long time. And having this target here of water allocation reform, one would like to have some information to say what have we done after 1994, so that we talk about this target from 2014, 2019, 2024, that it should be additional, you know, percentage to what we have done in order for us to change the situation. And, you know, it says a lot about, you know, fighting poverty. A lot of black people in rural areas, they depend on agriculture. And if they do not have access to this water, it means all the resources of government to eradicate poverty. It's just their money down the drain, because if there's no water, there's no life, and coming to agriculture is just next to zero. And the last question for now, on page 5, the last presentation, about managing local water infrastructure, water user association. Given the scenario of this resistance, of 18 years, we say irrigation boards to be transformed within 12 months. Is that realistic? I mean, given that background, that people are resisting transformation, and we say in 12 months we shall have changed, we shall have transformed. What does it take to transform for us to, you know, talk something realistically? I mean, I think it's a long term. People are just resisting, and legislation maybe is just for decoration in the papers there. There's no compliance and nothing's been done.
As I was listening to the first presentation when I came in, it was really good. It says it all. But I just want to know here when it says protection, the use of water resources, the need to protect the citizen rights to basic water services fair to all citizens. Affordable, viable, and sure, economically effective and efficient. There are quite a number of them, if I may go on and on, that has been said. But according to my assessment, I think it's directed to the people from the urban areas. Those are the people that all this goes to, because if I go back to the rural areas, all this does not apply to those people, because they get their water from the river. Some of those rivers are not even running. They're just stagnant. And you go to some of those rivers, there are these alien, whatever they call it, plants. And the worst part of it, Chairperson, the municipalities that are failing to maintain their sewage, the pipes, you are told they are worn up, they are worn out. Now, Ayavuza, all that debt runs to the river. I can mention areas who have experienced that. And we are not going to stop saying water is life. It is life. I would be very much, you know, I'll be happy if the department at a certain stage, they come back and tell us more about what I'm saying. But oh, now there's an improvement at that Umtata. The Umtata River now is wah. You know what I mean? Because it's a sing song, and you feel so as if you are not normal if you go back to one and the same thing, but only to find that there is no report that is giving you hope that at least something. Last time we discussed about Umtata River, which had the sewage running in, the island plants were there. I would very much love to hear from the department that that 123 has been fixed, you know. And one other thing, maybe, you know, I don't want to be very strong on this one, but in passing, for my own information alone, I would love to know how is Bushbuck Ridge of now laid, because there was a time when Bushbuck Ridge was, you know, in fashion, when there was scarcity of water, what? Everybody was at Bushbuck Ridge, Mpumalanga, yo, every morning, every afternoon. And then maybe I was not in that meeting whereby the department just reported about the Bushbuck Ridge water scarcity. Thank you.
Thank you, members. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members, for the comments. Indeed, I also just like to share that we're gathering momentum. Thanks for putting some brakes a bit. We've noted the questions. As a first instance, I would like to give the opportunity to the presenters. However, there are a number of us here who will add if any particular question, if it is not sufficiently addressed. If you can start with you, Deborah, the first presentation on the water allocation licensing, all of those related issues. And if needs be, others will come in and then talk on these institutional arrangements. Then.
Chair, there was a question on our capacity as the regulator to perform our duty as required. In my presentation, I alluded to that as an area that you have identified as a weakness. We are not fully capacitated, and there's a project that we are intending to embark on. It is awaiting DG's intervention for us to be able to move on that one. The intention is really to get graduates in science and other areas of need, take them through training and then be able to absorb some data for them to help us on the day-to-day compliance monitoring. This is a resource-intensive function and it requires high skills. So we are not of the view that those graduates would hit the ground running and that they'll be able to function on their own. And as a result, even within the department, we are looking at getting experienced personnel that can really be of assistance to us with the regulation function. That's one of the questions that I think I picked up. And that goes to Mr. Morgan's question as well on our ability to regulate, especially given that the expansion of the footprint. I think that that's part of it as well. The issue of how we are with licensing, I'm no longer the responsible person, but what I do know is that the project Lisama is still on. They are still looking at finalizing the backlog, but the last report I got is that the major part of it has been dealt with. How we look at allocation when at the face of this non-achievement of equity is that when we look at an application, the act does say that we look at how that is going to influence or how that is going to contribute to equity. However, we do not have any legislative prescription of what it is that the person has to meet in order for us to say, yes, your application does meet the requirements of equity. We do not have a legal tool of assessing or of measuring. It is by us just saying what you have put here may or may not. So that is where legislation is failing us. And that's one of the things that we're looking at in the legislative review process as to how to be able to do that. The other thing on the leniency part of the legislation is that the legislation does provide for trading. And in that provision for trading, it is very, very difficult as a department to say, no, we are not going to trade in water anymore because there is that legislative provision. And some of the cases that were taken to the tribunal on appeal were related to trading. The other question of Dr. Kosana's question on indicators for water allocation reform, I didn't quite understand the question there. But what I can say about the indicators is that maybe let's start with the priorities. The catchments that were prioritized for compulsory licensing, and please remember compulsory licensing is just but one of the mechanisms, is Gosinhlathuzi, Yandizo, and Inkomati. In the process, Inkomati was dropped, and then we added Tosca. Reason being, the Act says compulsory licensing can be done for equity and when the resource is threatened. So in Tosca, the resource was highly threatened, and that is why Tosca went on board, and again came on board. And again, it is because of the size of the area that we thought would be able to deal with it. Now, in the process of, during in the program, compulsory licensing, we do have a project in which we are looking at developing indicators of measuring the impact of water allocation reform. In other words, because we have finalized TOSCA now, we will be looking in 2-3 years' time, what have we achieved there with water allocation? Is the water that was allocated to the AGIs effectively and sufficiently used for productive use? So those are some of the things that we are looking at. If I missed Dr. Kosana's question, or I didn't understand the indicators there, I can come back to it once he has provided that clarity. And the issue of Mezikalala on what I presented on referring to the urban, it will be responded to by those that are responsible for water services, that is for provision, because I was presenting on the regulatory aspect of it. But we are in the regulation, we are not confined to the urban areas only. We cover the rural areas as well. So I think what you're talking about, it is that 6-7% that has not yet been covered by the water services. But I leave that to DG and Dr. Hyde.
Maybe those that were not sufficiently answered to do with that area of presentation, I know the licensing was not sufficient. If you can just cover that, that people, please, before we talk.
Okay.
Okay. Currently, there are two categories. You've got the backlog one and the current, which we're referring to your 2011 up to now. From the backlog, as of 7 September, we have dealt with about 124. I just need to confirm out of how many. I think it is about 295 of the remaining, but I need to confirm that backlog. And then there's about 30 of the backlog that are awaiting issues of authorization, and then they will be submitted to DG for signature. And as I've indicated, the licenses for 2011 and 2012, I just need to confirm the figures, then I'll respond to it.
Thank you, Chair. I will respond to the issues around water boards, and Eustacia will deal with the issues around water users association. I think the issue of bulk provision in South Africa is a challenge, because currently it appears under the Water Services Act, but it also appears under the local government legislation. So you find that some water services authorities who are districts, they can also provide bulk provision. So what we are trying to do with the reform is to make sure that we define regional bulk provision, which should be the mandate of the Minister of Water Affairs, and therefore the Minister and the mandate of the Water Board, so that there is clarity of what their responsibility is. So at a regional level, Minister will have a footprint in terms of regional bulk provision. And then the municipalities can do bulk where they have capacity. But the regional bulk should be a mandate of water board at a regional level. In terms of what is required to establish, I think Honorable Morgan, you are right that the consultation with relevant provinces. The challenge might be the consultation with the unions, because we also need to consult the unions. The transfer of assets, the minister has the powers to transfer the assets from one water board to another water board, as long as it remains within that area of operation, so that the users that have paid, they have benefit for that particular infrastructure. Yes, we are talking about expanding also the range in terms of the functions of water boards. In the past, they were only water services, but we want also them to deal with water resources at a regional level, because currently there are schemes and systems that are linked, that when you find that there are various institutions at a regional level dealing with water resources and also water services, which could be efficient if only one institution at a regional level deals with that particular infrastructure. And we are also saying that the issues of scale at a regional level, water boards will be able to have that skills, to retain skills and attract people, if they are given the mandate of a regional bulk infrastructure in terms of the development assets and also the operations and maintenance. And so they will not be encroaching on municipal responsibility. Although water boards are also allowed to do secondary activities. A secondary activity is where a municipality, through negotiations and through a contract, it can liaise with the municipality to enter into a contract. So they will continue to liaise with municipalities around those issues. Yeah, we are not going for constitutional changes, because we are not going to win. So we are just focused. If we could, we could. I think Helfart and DG and Fred are fundies on the water board. And then Bangi and Eustacia will deal with the water users.
that follow up?
Doing these things all along.
And again, it is not explicit. Why do we not have intents, you know, when you have so many engineers, I mean, qualified graduates who are unemployed? We understand that they have experience, but if you don't give them experience, who will do that? Because if they come as intent, they will definitely get experience, because they will be working under supervision of those who have the experience. And to say you don't know if a person does meet, you know, an applicant does meet the requirement, you know, as far as transformation is concerned, it's also not acceptable, because transformation policy explains what it means when you talk about transformation. And also, every department has, you know, a legal team or legal advisors who can assist if one is not sure as to whether people do meet requirements or not in terms of transformation. So it goes back to leniency, that people who are hated about the situation, the status quo will remain forever and ever, because we continue to say we don't understand what transformation is. And really, at this Asian era, we cannot say we do not understand what transformation is. Maybe at some stage we have to have a special meeting with these people who approve licenses. What do they understand by transformation? Where do they approve when they see that the people are just really making a change in the country? It is just resistance and nothing else. Thank you, sir.
Honorable Mazigala. Over to you, KJ, and your team.
Let's start again with the order of the follow-up questions, those not answered. Deborah did say you didn't understand or nearly clear what Mr. Susan has asked, is clarified. We can make a start with those, including the transformation ones and water licensing, then the Hilhart can come in and as well if on that. And then Togo will come on the follow-up of Morgan, and I have some views as well, which I wish to share on the institutional arrangement.
Thank you, Chair. Dr. Skosana, I understand your question as saying, how do we develop indicators for water allocation reform? Did I get it right this time? Okay. All right. The project that we have is to help us with indicators that measure, or that will measure, the impact of water allocation reform. But how we prioritize which areas. Now here I am referring specifically to the mechanism that we use, one of the mechanisms, which is compulsory licensing. There, the Act says that we can do that if it is for equity, one, and that is if it is for when the source is threatened. And that is now, I'm talking now under section 43 to 45 with compulsory licensing. And that's how we prioritize compulsory licensing. With how we evaluate licenses is under section 27 of the National Water Act. It is section 27(1)(b). There we do not prioritize, because we evaluate applications as they come. If I have to revert back to the issue of prioritization, when we embark on compulsory licensing, the first thing that we do there is to determine who the users are. After having determined where the users are, we determine the yield, so some of the things, the yield of the entire area. Then when we call for licenses, that's where then we start with the prioritization to say how many black users are here, how many black applicants do we have, and then we prioritize them in the allocation schedule. In the normal applications for licenses, we also prioritize them when we get applicants from HDIs. That's what we used to do. We prioritize applicants on race and gender. I am not sure as to whether I have sufficiently satisfied your question, but this is as far as I can go. To say that we have two mechanisms at the moment, that is compulsory licensing, and one is the way the applications come in, and unfortunately with the licenses, we do not determine who applies. Everybody applies when they need to use water at any particular point in time. Should I stop before I respond to the others?
No, I'm partially covered, but I'm talking about the monitoring targets. Those indicators that are specifically determined for the monitoring purposes. That's the problem statement, monitoring. And the second problem statement I raised in my question is the allocation reform intervention, preventions. But anyways, I'm okay.
Chair, without pursuing it any further, maybe it will be wasting time, but maybe in future we'll get into the matter again. But what I can say is that if we have a policy that doesn't work for us, I don't see, you know, why the policy cannot be reconsidered. That is why we have public participation, that is why we have policy conferences, just to measure if what we have in place doesn't work, or it does work for us, then take it from there.
Thank you. The department have noted the issue. Is all your question answered?
May I add to responses? Mrs. Kosana about Kanazan. I mean, I know that area, that when I spend some time there, it is a problematic area. And what Deborah said also, we try to differentiate between support and regulation. There's a regulation, what we call it, regulation performance management system, that also look at indicators that we have. For example, in our regulations, say people mustn't be more than 7 days without water, minimum flow and things. And there is a report published by Deborah's chief director on those per municipality. We can make it available to this committee. But then the support kicks in, and that's where our regional offices also support with providing support. But we can't fully do the work of municipalities. But what I also know in that area is the issue of proper connections and metering and unauthorized or illegal connections. If that is happening, then you'll have a problem. People taking more than they're entitled to do. So we can provide that regulation reports. The other question, Mr. Morgan, about the issue of the institutions. As Togo said, we would like water boards to also, because they started by bulk water provision, potable water, to also go into the area of sewage treatment, bulk sewage treatment, as a secondary function. We can also look at if you look at a blue drop and a green drop report, it's clear that basically, those municipalities that use water boards or other private companies, they've achieved good results. So we clearly show that we need this expertise for results. But unfortunately, we as a department can't force them to use a water board. When it comes to secondary activities, they can do certain water resource functions, but they can't be a CMA, the catchment management agency. They can do it in terms of a performance agreement. The Act, the Water Service Act, also stipulates that when a water board do a secondary activity, they must account separately. Because there were cases where some water boards even ventured overseas. And then actually it shouldn't be to the detriment of the consumers that are paying their tariffs to venture into other activities. So the Water Service Act clearly stipulates that they must account separately for such secondary activities. But you know, wants to add, and I also want to forget to add all the footprint Mrs. Kosana has questioned about it.
Okay, on the question of how DWA and COCTA are linked to support municipalities
there's a number of, I'll call them initiative. We do have the bilateral discussions that we have through the local government turnaround strategy, where we, as a department, we've made commitments in relation to the current funding available to intervene. However, on top of that, we have what we call the rapid response unit, which would go in a municipality for the, in say, for example, the area that has been mentioned, to go and assess and diagnose the problem. The limitation of the process is that the funding to go and intervene is very limited. But we do have funding from our accelerated community infrastructure program that is assisting. What we have also done is that we are now in a partnership with the Municipal Infrastructure Support Agency, MISA, from COPTA, to ensure that there's alignment between the Rapid Response Unit and MISA, and to ensure that there's no duplication, and we are working together in relation to that. But the other issue is that we are also looking at how best to maximize the grants that are available, because you've got your MIG, your RB, and all that. We are engaging at that level to intervene.
I should have mentioned, and apologies for that, in the draft strategy on page 72 to 78, there are a number of key actions, and the members of this committee have asked what are we doing in detail, what are the detailed things we plan to do, and there's a number of, I think, 79 key detailed actions that we plan. I also just want to refer members to those sections, and I think the Secretariat can make, it's only 7 pages, make copies of those at a later stage. The members be clear of where those are the detailed actions that we propose. Thank you, ma'am.
I just want to respond to the question on Water Use Association that Honourable Member Tsotsi asked. But she's just gone out now. I don't know if I should wait for her to come back.
Can those who are outside are outside. They are here.
In terms of the transformation of irrigation boards to water use associations, I mean, it is critical that we transform them all and at the, in the ambit of the legislation so that we can regulate them and that we don't perpetuate the status quo. There has been resistance to transformation, especially in some areas. I mean, for example, the Mpumalanga area in Komati, there's been a resistance to transformation. But what is important is that I think that we will take a strong stance against it and issue directives in those areas. But in most cases, it's been because of the representativity of the MANCO representation of the management committee. And our approach is that we won't only use representativity as the only indicator for transformation, that we will look at the scorecard transformation process. We will look at more than one indicator. And by doing that, we will ensure that we also strengthen our regulatory and monitoring in the department so that we can regulate and monitor the business plans and check that every year or every second year that there is an improvement in the targets. And we haven't had the capacity to do that in all the water use associations or in the irrigation boards. So there are plans in place to do it. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to cover just a little bit on some of the areas. Perhaps even on this subject of transformation, water allocation reforms, on another day, maybe at your invitation, we'll unpack it even more because there are dedicated teams who work on that. I do know, even on the authorization process, as the last stage, when I approve, having gone through so many stages, starting from the regions, even looking in the area of a reserve, the equity issues are addressed. So it's not as if they are not. And in application would favor those who are historically disadvantaged. That is a fact. Even when you allocate to those who are not at disadvantage, you do want to know how those who are historically disadvantaged would benefit. There is a clause there. I when I read an application, I go through all of those processes. And so maybe it's not sufficiently explained today, but if it's an area of interest, and it would be addressed. But I also want to indicate that even the legislative reviews we're going through, which will also be brought to the attention of the members here in that process, that process of legislative review, the equity component is at the core of it. Even Hilhard in the presentation, the highlights through that National Water Act, water allocations, water tribunal issues, all of those things, and even the National Water Resources itself strategy. I think part of these processes will address the issues raised here. And because it was asked specifically, is the National Water Resources addressing this? Yes, it is, because the National Water Resources strategy is a chapter of the National Water Act 2, Chapter 2, and the catchment management agencies are there as well. Chapter 2, one is part 1, the other is part 2. So all of these, that, I just wanted to mention that. But let me go back to the other one Mr. Morgan initiated on the institutional reform processes. Togo did answer, but just to add and correct a little bit, the additional consultative process, she rightfully says, this is our thinking. This is what we're putting on the table at this stage, which may have changed what was on the table even for us a few years ago, because this has been a long process. I was associated with it in my previous life, one on the other side with water boards, so I know it so well. It will not be confined only to the political heads, as she indicated. Sector groupings will also have a say. Associated associations, like, for example, SALGA, which represents municipalities, clearly said they want to be consulted on this process. They've been associated with it before in various attempts. There was a little break at some stage in terms of active involvement in some areas, which I may mention just to show how complicated you write, Mr. Morgan, because I'll talk about the capacity we have even to manage the process. Some areas would like to see differently to what we're putting on the table. A typical example is the Mangaung area. You have your Mangaung municipality, but you equally have a water board called Bloom Water there. Mangaung have put on the table something different to what we are putting, and they've come to us and presented it to us. We listened, because we're also developing this one. We said for it to work, what we are putting on the table is actually encroaching on the other area of responsibility of the water board there. So you have to talk with each other. So there's also an element of relationship management where historically in some areas the relationship has not been good between the water services authority and the water services provider, which is the water board. If one, like a Mangaung, wants to put on the table a municipal-owned entity similar to what you have with Johannesburg Water or what you used to have with Utugela Water, you want to be both a bulk and a retail provider. You cannot just impose, because you are water service authority, you need to consult. So you are correct. Some of these changes might require legislative changes. By definition, if you have put it as a, let's say you put it as a state-owned entity, it might be a municipal-owned entity. It might be even broader than that. It depends on the capacity. So all of those need to be configured. And also, there's no one-size-fits-all. We do know the current institutional arrangements in South Africa are different. For example, in the part of the world where we are now, which is the Western Cape or Cape Town
Perth as it exists. You do not have a water board here. The municipality is responsible for the whole value chain. So you cannot come with a prescription from Pretoria and say what applies in the KZN between Mgeni Water and eThekwini. You can just simply impose in this part without encroaching on so many feet, trampling on them and protected legally, constitutionally. So it depends as it evolves and the discussion is opened up through a consultative process, what is it that
thank you, Chidi.
Okay. I wanted to thank you.
Thank you for that. 5 minutes break. You may bring your tea inside. It will be a waking and drinking session. Thank you very much.
Oh my God.
Thank you, members. We had the key issues that were highlighted. We also got the equity water allocation, and then the institutional and governance. Now we are going to monitoring research and information. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members and colleagues. I'll try to, this is one of those areas which is very largely sufficiently described and articulated in the policy and the legislation. So I'll try to sort of point to that and perhaps highlight some of the issues as well. The first thing that I can say is that in this space, the old adage applies all the time. That says you can't manage if you cannot measure it or monitor it. That's a very important part. And I was listening very carefully to the questions and the things that people were saying, so keep that in mind. The second issue that I wanted to say is that, we sit here because we are all water. We start talking about flow of water. Maybe one can argue that flow of information and knowledge is probably as important as the flow of water itself at the end of the day. So that element, those elements are very
important. Sorry, members, do you have
the
okay.
Yeah. The other thing I want to say is that from the policy perspective, if you look at Section 6.8 of the White Paper of the National Water Policy, you will see, it's not written there, but I'm just pointing to where the information is coming from. It clearly shows you the issues that relate to monitoring and information and some aspects of research requirements and so on.
What are you saying, Namaste? I don't hear.
It's part 4.8.
I asked, do you...
Just if you go back on the slide. It's information, monitoring, and research.
Sorry for not numbering. Next time they will number the pages. Must number the pages next time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So as I was saying, the issue of measurement, the issue of monitoring become very, very critical, and also the flow of that information and knowledge to ensure that whichever respective areas are actually able to do their job in terms of decisions and other things. I also indicated that this stems from a policy perspective, it stems from national white paper or national water policy. In specific areas that can be looked at is your section 6.8 of that paper. Within the legislative aspects, we're talking mainly about chapter 14 of the National Water Act, which has got very specific linkages or connection with Chapter 10 of the Water Services Act, which looks at various aspects of it. If you look on the services side, it's
I'm
more
sorry to stop you again. Members are wavering to me. Chileka, can you address the issue of the pages, please, if they are there? Master Mbangizen, if you mention something that is not in the document, you may say this one is not in the document that I have given you.
Okay.
I'm Meanwhile, Mr. Mbangizeni is still sorting himself in or out. Can some the other presenters get in so that we mustn't lose time?
Skills will come in. I just thought that was his presentation was prepared. If you have explained properly what where it fitted when last week and where you whether there are any changes, so that we don't.
I haven't changed the major part of the discussion because this is completely aligned to the document that has been provided. The slide that she had is the slide I had, so I'm not sure about what the members
have.
Talk to your slides, Mr. Marise. Talk to the slides so that members can we look at the slides. Let's look there so that we mustn't waste another 10 minutes. I'm sorry for that. Continue.
Okay, thank you very much. They just go to the next slide. I think you will notice that as I was starting, I was trying to explain the point that indicates that monitoring and information are critical and indispensable for effective water management. And I pointed to the areas where from policy and the legislation these things are linked to. We need an issue of make sure that reliable information is very critical for the future and perhaps some of the areas where we're looking at as we speak and the questions that people were raising a little bit earlier. The need to address, it is needed to address escalating challenges in terms of, for example, issues that relate to increased water needs for growth, development, and equity, some of which has been discussed in the earlier presentation. As these demands increase, the information is required and so is your monitoring requirements as well. And complexity that is brought by uncertainty, issues of climate change, those kinds of things, it's fundamental to ensure that the information is available to be able to manage these things, including your competing demands, as well as from different users, issues of ensuring sustainable ecosystems and so on. Those things are very critical in terms of ensuring that we do our work as a sector. Good information on water obviously depends on the effective monitoring systems. And if you look at the legislation, it shows you very specifically what type of information systems are expected. We also expect good data in terms of quality as well, which is secured and reliable, archiving and highly accessible in terms of dissemination and so on. And perhaps I can just quickly say here to comment on that if you look at the archiving element, we've got certain data and information, for example, that has been with the department for many, many years, 100 years, 40 years, you know, and so on, which is utilized to actually come up with some of the recommendations that are being made here. One of the things that we should mention is that, in general, the hydrological data sets, particularly those are flows in terms of amount of water flowing, the rivers and so on, groundwater and so on, they are still adequate to do some of the things we need to do, particularly at national level, but insufficient. It has got insufficient growth and declines in certain places because of the increase of perhaps the activities that are taking place in those areas. Also issues of maintenance, issues of vandalism, thefts of monitoring equipment that we place across the country. That part, for example, is actually not exclusive to South Africa. It happens where you put these facilities in remote areas and all that. So the equipment, like an example, is your solar panels and things like that, which we use to recharge batteries and other things. So these things can actually disappear. We do have challenges through that. The other thing is the issue of measurements of issues such as rainfall gauges. I think I would need to be a bit careful on that statement, because if you look at climate data itself, it's not necessarily a a mandate of the department, but because we need it, we do measure this. So it also has to do with other entities such as the South African Weather Services, for example. And if they deal with collection of that data, like, for example, some of the things that you may know, there's a lot of usage of radar-derived or radar-based data. From our side, we need a lot of observation data to be able to do our work. But then how do you deal with that? You need to have an arrangement. In fact, at the present moment, the department does have an agreement with South African Water Services as well as your Agriculture Research Council to ensure that the need for the type of data is appropriately balanced in terms of observed data and data that would be looked at, say, through these gadgets that we have, you know, that type of thing. So it's very critical that that relationship comes in. And I'll talk to it a little bit later. Also, the issue of sharing, one can say between government departments, and the nature of the policy and legislation, I should say, also entities that are responsible for data acquisition and management is very critical, because we actually are in a space of what one can call multi-agency responsibilities in terms of data acquisition and management, whether it's South African Weather Services, whether it's CSA or whoever is responsible for collecting data and information that is important for water management in general. The sharing of that information with countries in the form of river basins, I think you've heard from the fact that our water is shared, more than 60% of our rivers, shared rivers, downstream countries in many respects, right through from Namibia through to Mozambique and so on. So the sharing of the information becomes very critical, and it's quite an important part that also link to issues of economic development, water security, those kinds of things. And I can mention there, in terms of perhaps what is happening at the present moment, the department itself, for example, hosts a database that collects certain hydrological data for the SADC region. It's known within that context, which also supports issues of exchanging of information on flood management and things related to that, and perhaps input into the issues of climate change and other things. So those things become part of what this monitoring and information becomes a key issue. And what I can also mention there, implied into that, is that we have to have standards and processes that are actually allow us to look at the data and information in a similar manner. So it becomes quite important. Now, the next issue there is that, the next thing, where we speak about the National Register of Water Use, again, as I was saying earlier, it is actually almost like a prescription in the Act that we have to have a National Water Use Register. It's prescribed. And we've looked at that. We've done a lot. A lot of work still needs to be done in terms of ensuring the quality of the data and the completeness of the data and information. But key to that, within the context of National Water Resource Strategy, is the recognition that we need to extend from the registration to monitoring. And a lot of discussions have actually been put on the table here in terms of how do you measure, especially on the use side. So obviously going forward in terms of the National Water Resource Strategy, it's very critical that we elevate or we move on to doing ensuring water use monitoring or monitoring of water use, particularly in terms of, for example, the information we collect through licensing, for example, assessing that information, how does it inform back into the policies and other things. So it becomes very critical that that value chain is also completed. There is the next thing is that the issue of the information systems. You will find that we are complying in terms of what we are expected to do. But one of the big challenges is that the systems or the information systems that we have are mainly standalone systems. And there's a reason for that, because we're looking at subject matter things and so on. But we're beginning to say, look, we need to integrate. And also the limitation in terms of accessibility. And accessibility limitation is not much about we don't want to provide information. It's also the nature of the information that is put in there. It needs to be presented in a manner that is accessible to those who need to use it. So we are looking at that. For example, we've started a program already, which is timed very much along the lines of the cycle of the National Water Resource Strategy Review, which relates to National Integrated Water Information System. there I should also mention that there's always a temptation to focus only on the things that are visible. And so we need to really go deeper into that to ensure that the information that is not necessarily readily visible needs to be dealt with in a manner that it assists the various levels of decision making, be it within the department, the sector level, and perhaps the sector that people like yourselves occupy. It's very important. I know that we've debated about skills and all those things. The reality is that monitoring and information is not inexpensive. We have to buy the gadgets to do these things. We have to get people who are qualified to do those things. And I think it's almost a continuous issue that ensures that the balance exists to ensure that as technology grows, we are able to have people that are able to adapt to these things so that the skills are commensurate with the requirement. So is funding as well. Again, because this is more engine room type work, it becomes very difficult to actually even motivate for funding, but it is very critical that the equipment that we put out there is appropriately funded. And we know it is inadequate. We know that we are expected to be more efficient and optimal and so on. As an example, and I wouldn't want to raise this because it's still in the process, we go through a cost-benefit analysis to see what is the optimal way of actually structuring the monitoring systems so that at least we get the more value from what we already have. And also combining your technology that does not require a lot of expenses with the technology that we have to ensure that we provide the proper information. And taking note of the complexity, distribution, all of those things that are related, their costs and so on. These are very critical issues. The one thing that is also very critical is the scale issue, because monitoring itself happens at the lowest level, which is local, regional as well as your national levels of government, and also within the sector itself, be it sectoral requirements of particular activities or business or whatever, they would want to do a monitoring that allows them to do their responsibility. As we push the idea of saying that water is central, everyone would want to bring this in. And hence you start hearing discussions that we have earlier which we discussed, like footprinting and other things. The numbers are required. The monitoring is required to be able to provide that information. And of significance as well is that the information needs of many stakeholders must be addressed. And if you look at the nature of the policy, such that information needs to be readily available within reasonable confines of the policies and legislation that we have. The many institutions, as I've indicated, are very much involved with this business. So we need to be able to look at that within the context of improving governance of that, because it's not much about us doing the actual work, but ensuring that all the other institutions are able to do what they're expected to do and they are following particular standards and so on. Fund skills, I would have preferred to say human power, but we have manpower, that's okay. I think you understand what we mean by that. The growth, as it is, it needs to ensure that the efforts are optimized within the monitoring. That's why I was saying that some of the projects we do is cost-benefit to make sure that the path that you take is optimal, so to speak. The benefits, ensuring synergies and all that, which are gained through collaboration, pooling of resources and efforts and that, it becomes a very involved responsibility that is beyond just collecting the data, storing it and disseminating it, but ensuring that all those that are playing within that space are actually able to do that. This was also reported earlier. I think Toko did mention the fact that some of the approach we are looking at is to say that we need to lead a national plan in partnership with organs of state where water management institutions, water resources, water sector institutions to improve, facilitate and coordinate the ongoing monitoring, recording, assessing and disseminating of data and information on what on different levels. And that also means that you also look at the issue of ownership from the point of view of who collects the data, who stores it for who, and who gets it or who assesses it. So the department's leadership there becomes very critical. And I think if I can mention, the strength that we have is in the legislation, because most of this is actually written in the legislation, and also that because of the usage of information and knowledge, almost all stakeholders see the positive side of mutually collaborating, which makes it a lot easier in terms of the processes, but it is complicated in terms of resources, subject matter, and so on. The objectives themselves would also include raising awareness, because most, as I said earlier, some of these things are almost like engine room technical things that are not necessarily connected with some of the things that we need. So awareness becomes a very critical part to say information is as important as other assets that we use in management, in managing. So we need to protect it and we need to put it there. Second, bullet there, we are saying national water monitoring governance. You will see that these are new concepts that have come in over the past 5 to 10 years or so. Some of it is actually being improved now, especially in terms of the ability to do multi-agency leadership and coordination. It's a subject matter on its own, and I don't think I want to get into that, but it becomes very critical to ensure that these things are done in a very responsible manner as well. Improving on the collection of data and information, not just that. If you look at what is happening on the ground, you should be able to say if you are intervening, if you are deciding, what is the basis, scientifically based or evidence-based, those kinds of things, you need to have that information. And technology, parallel to that, technology is improving or growing. So you need to be able to catch up with new ways of collecting this data. Rationalization and information, national scale, that type of thing. We've spoken about that. And if you go into the general document, you'll see some of these things here. Efficiency in terms of access, national coverage. And national coverage is not just a geographic coverage. It's a coverage that relates to what are the activities that are happening on the ground so that you'll be able to respond to whatever decision requirements that are made on the district, or plans for that matter. You need to be able to refine some of these things. Reliability and quality check data and information. Very often, we simply just rely on the expertise, but we also need to have processes to be able to check and verify some of the data, for example, using official standards like your SANS or SABS or ISO and all that type of thing. And all of those we are looking at to ensure that when you get the data, you'll be able to say it is what it is supposed to be. And that we do through various means. The investment, again, I'm not going to go into that detail because we are going to be talking on the infrastructure side as well. The reality is that whatever you invest on the development infrastructure and any other activity that you do, a certain portion needs to go into this space so that at least you are able to have a sustainable business, if I can put it that way. It becomes very, very critical to look at it that way. And the interesting part is that the absolute figure is very slow, very low, but the result or the impact is very high. So you need to make sure that the kind of resources that you put there are sufficiently stable to ensure that everything else is done in accordance with what you want to do. They use the advanced, and I think I've spoken about technology. On the research and innovation side, just to get in, these are interlinked because it's not just a matter of just collecting the data, but it's also perpetually looking at new ways of doing things as well. Again, the key issues there, awareness in terms of investment, investment on the information that we get in there. We have also, just to indicate there in terms of some of the things that are happening, implementation of National Monitoring and Information Management Plan. We have one that is already there, which was timed with the previous strategy. Now we've got to get into a new cycle as such. I've mentioned the issue of integrated water information management. With the DG sitting here, I would say the 2019 looks a little bit worrying because we actually have more of a 5 years. So I would say there we can do better if we put a lot of resources in the program. And I think I would prefer that 2019 we can revise that to look depending on the resources that we have, because it actually takes us beyond the 5 years that we had, and we'll look at that carefully. The quality of data and information, I've raised that. Investment in technical expertise, I've indicated that. I think one, just go to the next one. Yeah, the other thing is, and again, some of the issues that I've said, a network of data collection by water users, and some of this includes the questions that you say when, like for example, if you look at legislation and policy, since you issue a license, we expect you to collect the data and report on certain types of data. So that part of it is also it's also expected. There's a whole lot of areas which we look at to ensure that the water users in the sector actually is able to do that, and you need to manage it from a network perspective. I've mentioned the issue of South African Water Services, issues of sharing right across, including regional, as I've indicated. I've given examples of that. Again, the establishment of your catchment management areas and so on, it's also part of the things that we have to do as well. Improvement of resources that are required. I think I'll leave that because I've actually discussed that a bit earlier. In terms of the issues that we are doing, and I think we look at this from the point of view of the challenges that we face in terms of scarcity and also the deterioration of the water quality, which I, without getting into that because we are discussing it separately, this becomes a very critical part to ensure that the information, the monitoring information, research and innovation, it's actually part of what we do. We don't have a lot of alternatives but to invest in the future through the development of research and innovation in the water sector. And I think if you link that with your science and technology side of the business, you will hear about the issue of the knowledge economy and the increasing in terms of the GDPs and other things. Some of these technologies are things that we've got to keep up with, so to speak, and it's not exclusive to other areas. It also includes the water sector as such. I think we are lucky in a way, in the sense that the model that has been done of funding through the Water Research Commission, for example, has given us quite a lot out of just, one would say, a mere 150 million rand per annum. Of course, we know that not everything is covered there, because there are other things that happen from other agencies, also the private sector, you know, those kinds of things. So we need to have that big picture. Most of the research is conducted at universities, as you may know, science councils, parastatals. We don't necessarily account for every single cent that goes there, but at least we have an idea of where these things are happening. And you can see, again, the significance of actually being able to coordinate, the significance of having a national plan that allows us to work from the same page, because we are covering various aspects of this and sitting playing different roles. I think the issue of fragmentation between the water sector and so on, that is part of the issue of trying to address that. That plan is meant to address the fragmentation that is mentioned there, which I've implied in the earlier discussion. Research on the reliance on international research and innovations, while there are local solutions, it sometimes can be a bit of a problem, and I don't want to get into the subject matter elements of that, but the reality is that in as much as we need to be able to see what the international is doing, we also need to be able to find local solutions to our problems as well. We need to ensure the training so that we can encourage to contribute towards solutions of the water sector. And you can say a lot about that in terms of what one could call homegrown solutions and other things. Maybe we can move on that. Last two slides, which I have, in terms of the solutions to some of those challenges, we need to take a leading role in directing and supporting research and innovation to address the specific challenges, that some of which we don't have to repeat here. A framework, as I've said, for monitoring and evaluation of research and innovation progress and uptake. That is something that we have to work very closely with DST, because DST actually, science and technology, they actually develop some of those tools in the framework. So we need to be able to do that. Uptake and use is also very critical, because it's one thing for research to be generated, but it's another to be able to ensure that this thing is sort of infused into our daily work within the sector and so on. Promotion of innovation and technology in the private and public sector, making funds available, working with them to test some of these methodologies and things like that. At the present moment, a lot happens out in the private sector, no doubt. But obviously, they're looking at particular areas, and we need to look at this to ensure that it also is sufficiently coordinated and benefit the total sector. Last bullet point, for some of us, very close in terms of issues of indigenous knowledge. Very often, when you think of indigenous knowledge systems, you think of the mutis that we have generated as people and so on, but we forget some of the water resources management tools and how we respect, you know, water and all those kinds of things. And I think linked to that, issues of water conservation and demand management come in. We can't just come and impose some sort of, you know, methodologies that are not necessarily rooted in the way in which, as a people, we do things. And that's a very important area, especially in water, to actually bring in. And a lot of talk is coming in on that. Establishment of a comprehensive inventory of water-related research and information data for the country. WRC has gone quite far on some of these things, but we need to find this from the leadership perspective. And also the funding aspects become very critical without getting into the modalities of that. We do have one already through the WRC, but we need to be able to look at how do we improve on some of the issues. And obviously effective utilization of technology. That aspect becomes very critical because within the context of mobile and satellite technology, it's probably a science and technology that has come over the past 5 to 10 years. So obviously you can't expect maturity level in terms of usage of that. But there are a lot of programs in the country that are allowing us to be able to tap into that and actually grow going into the future. Public-private partnerships for security of funding and so on. And that's where I leave it for now. Thanks.
Thank you, as I have already alluded before, anyone, any member who want to take that just concern methods for now.
Chairperson, I'm appealing to you that let's proceed with this presentation very fast so that we can come up with questions and inputs, because now time is running against us. Please, I'm appealing to you.
So when you present, you must look at your wrist so that you must be able to see what time is. Time allocation, you know, it's so difficult when you are presenting and I stop you. It's not human. The next presenter.
That is on the skills, Chair, and shortly after that, to the communication, and then last, the infrastructure after that.
You all have it, members. Over to you.
Good afternoon. My name is Petunia Ramnenyo in Regional Coordination, also responsible for skills development. I will try and be quick in my presentation, and maybe the focus will be towards the last two slides. I think the first slide is just to give a background on the landscape for skills development and indicating the shortages that are there, and that we're using the National Qualification Framework as an overarching document to design education, training, human resource and skills development. I think the challenge there is that primarily skill challenges have been converted into human resource concerns. When we look at the next slide on the chapter for on the National Water Resource Strategy, we have looked at, on your left, the HRDs, the Human Resource Development for South Africa, the New Growth Path, the National Skills Development Strategy, number 3, and the Energy Water CETA Sector Skills Plan that is guiding the water sector from in terms of the skills. And then we're also looking at the outcomes and the MTS, which would then lead to the implementation of the strategy. The objective, therefore, is to ultimately ensure sustainable and equitable water, building and maintaining an effective institution, and ensure that we meet the growth and development goals. The next 3-4 slides are just a, yeah, if we could look into this. The approach in terms of dealing with skills development and capacity building is that we do have the department as a lead with a water sector leadership group that is focusing on skills. And then we are saying that there are 3 bands that we need to look at: the GET, which is your general education and training, which is your primary for in the olden era, where in some of the programs that we have internally in the department, we've got your Vaswali Metsi, South African Youth Water Prize, where the school children are encouraged to participate in water program through poetry, which in a way starts to contribute to what Mr. Mbangi was talking about, indigenous knowledge. We're also looking at on the general education and training also, we had a partnership with, we've developed some resource material, and USASOL has partnered with the department in assisting to publish those material. We have workshopped the educators, and those resource material have also been approved by the Department of Basic Education, and they will be rolled out. For the further education and training, that is where there's much of the work that still needs to be done in terms of how best do we use the FETs that are currently existing to expand, especially on water-related skills. And also in relation to the alignment between what they are doing and what the CETAs are mandated to do. Because what is coming out is that none of the FETs that we have analyzed are accredited by the CETA, especially the energy and water CETA. And also we are looking at how best we then access the funding, because the position is that the levies that municipalities are paying for skills are paid to the local government CETA, but you have the energy and water CETA that is supposed to be taking care. So that collaboration is some of the discussions that we are engaging with. But fortunate enough, coming to contribute to the HET, to part of the HET, is that the local government CETA has been able to assist in some of the training of the process controllers, your operators at a municipal level, where we were training them in response to some of the challenges that we picked up from the Green Drop assessment, so that you have them as having that accredited training. However, the other component on the HET is that there is partnerships also with the universities from the department in relation to offering of bursaries, where we've partnered with about 12 universities. We've got learners that are attending water-related qualification. But also there are some courses that have been identified that we have been engaging with your at Central University of Technology in Pretoria and also in Cape Peninsula in relation to that. Then there's also issues of sector intelligence, governance, and funding. I think this is in, if we look at what Mr. Mbangi was presenting, that is in summary on how best do you use that information and data to ensure that there's that sector intelligence. As I've tried to summarize from that slide, the next few slides are just going into detail. I think the first bullet I've already alluded to, and we are rolling it out. And the issues of capacitating the educators is as one of the key things so that water become a big subject at the schools. And also the issues of public education and awareness drive. In relation to the further education and training, I think I've alluded to that, but we, as I said, the issue of promoting and strengthening the apprenticeship system, we are seeing that as a big opportunity to assist in terms of the water-related works that needs to be done, and also from a training and capacity building initiative. On the higher education alignment to the water sector, the Water First Learning Academy. We want to strengthen that so that the graduate trainees that are in the department are also accessible, you know, to the sector, but also that partnership that needs to be there with the private sector, not only from the Dual Learning Academy, but even other related academies that are producing students that have got water-related institutions. I think the point I'm trying to drive here is the relationship between the training and the work environment. That alignment is still there because you'd find that they are unemployed graduates that have got this qualification. But when you look at how the advertisement are made, you know, we require particular years of experience. So we need to match that gap to say how do you get them to be having those experience as required from your advertisement. But the other one is pointing to the Learning Academy is in relation to. We all know about the Occupational Specific Dispensation, OSD. We are having those graduate trainees, ensuring and assisting them in the processes of registration with the different councils so that they are then also registered and recognized as either engineers or scientists. The next slide is on the workplace training and development, which is quite critical in that. First of all, it is about how best do we as the department and also as a sector assist and lead the municipalities in some of the decisions they make in relation to their sector, the sector skills plan that they develop at a municipal level. We have analyzed some of them, and what was shocking is that you would find that there's maybe three courses identified for water. The rest is more on a senior level. And when you look at the levels that are there at a municipality, you find that those who are at the lower levels were not fully included, you know, for them to can then be engaged in water-related activities, especially when you look at some of the issues that you were raising to say, we keep on saying there's no capacity and the people that are working there are not qualified. But the intervention that the municipalities are putting in place are not really talking to that. That is why we're saying as a department we are engaging with SALGA and in some cases directly through our local government turnaround strategy on how best then to change that. But also the role that the sitters are playing, you know, we want them to upscale to being at a professional level because there's a view that those that are undergoing some of the courses that are offered through the sitters are not fully recognized and they cannot then compete with those that would have degrees at particular universities. But also the dialogues and programs that are on retention strategies for water sector. I think most of the presentation today we're talking about issues of water conservation and demand management and awareness, and it's one of the key drivers that we need to do from the different angles that I've mentioned, your general education, higher education, but also at a public awareness level for everybody to engage on that. We've learned lessons from the 49M of ESCOM, and we are engaging in a process of how best we then also put water saving at that level. Yeah, the sector invests intelligent. I think it has been covered by what Mr. Mbangi has mentioned. I wouldn't want to take through. And these are some of the demands that are there in terms of what we should be focusing on. I wouldn't want to go into the detail of that. But in summary, this would indicate if we were to put enough efforts and be able to meet the demand. Excuse me, this is the number of human capital that is required. And I know the question would be how far are we? If you look at the application or those learners that are, what's the name? Those that are accepted at universities and compared to the needs of the sector, we are still far behind. And one of the solutions is that it should not start at a university level. It should start at a primary level. That's why as we talk about skills development, it should start at your grade zero and how you push that process through up to for them to also focus on math and science subject that will get there. This slide is just a summary of what I was saying in terms of how we want to approach issues of skills development on the intelligence issue, but also quality assurance to track progress, looking at strategic level reporting, monitoring and evaluation to say what we're doing is adding value. But what is also important is the planning. It's quite important to have that at a having targets that are set nationally. As you go into what Herhard had mentioned, page that page with the 79 actions, is there are details of what needs to be done, but also the resources to do that. I think it's one of the issues that we need to look at, especially from a funding source. But again, the capacity, you know, from the department, but also in the sector to respond to that. Do we have mentors who can will be able to take those that are going through the pipeline? Do we have capacity for people to train? How ready are the universities to take on the increased number of learners? Are we ready with the courses that need speciality? You know, those are some of the engagement. I think on advocacy, there's that leadership from a political and also that buy-in, but also, as I said, mainstreaming water into the education and training and then ensuring that it's within the water literacy. Quickly to indicate there's also work that COGTA is doing in assisting on issues of capacity building, and we are continuously engaging with them from their capacity building framework. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Temba, Media and Communication, over to you.
Thank you. is Madam Chair, Honourable Members. In communication, we want to believe that we hit the ground running in as far as marketing and publicizing the NWRS 2. Already workshops are being planned countrywide where officials of the department from national and provincial offices are going to speak to the local people and explain the processes and listen and hear the views of the people on the ground. We also plan to have road shows throughout the country. We'll also use multi-purpose centers for information sessions. We further plan to engage with business community and make presentations before them. We also identify the consumer forums as possible partners in the whole process. And then when it comes to media arrangements, Madam Chair, we have a whole lot of plans in place. Already the Minister has held a media briefing to announce the launch and later the gazetting of NWRS2. Now, from there, we want to, from the media's point of view, we want to hold workshops with various media houses in various provinces so that we unpack the intricacies and the meaning of the NWRS, because it has come to our attention that some of the journalists who write about water and environmental issues do not necessarily read our documents. Hence, from time to time, you find distorted reports in newspapers. So instead of being reactive, we want to be proactive by engaging them and explain in detail the very meaning of the NWRS. But what is even more important in our endeavor is that we have engaged the independent newspaper group, which is a media house for various newspapers such as The Star in Johannesburg, Pretoria News, the Cape Argus, Isolezwe, Eastern Cape Herald, the Natal Mercury, Diamondfield Advertiser in Kimberley, and a whole lot of community newspapers that belong to this newspaper house. We have also plans in place to have opinion pieces. In other words, various experts in the sector writing about the NWRS, not necessarily expressing a positive view of the document. We welcome all sorts of views from various experts, such as academics. Already we've had a very incisive yet critical reaction opinion piece which appeared in Business Day, if my memory serves me well, which was written by Professor Mike Muller, who is a former Director General in the department. Even though he was critical of the document, but we do welcome opinions from various people. So the process of opinion pieces has started. Other academics have also commented. Tony Churchill, for instance, who is very critical of the department. The department never does right as far as he is concerned. We also intend engaging the press clubs. There is the National Press Club, but at the moment, the Cape Town Press Club and the Pretoria Press Club seem to be the most active of all. So we'll take the opportunity of engaging them by asking the minister to address their members, because members of press clubs, most of them are important opinion makers on most of these issues. Okay. We also plan to have radio campaigns, both in commercial and community radios, because we believe that we would like to stretch our resources as far as possible, to stretch our messages to the very rural people who may not necessarily read newspapers, the Sowetan or the Star or whatever newspaper, but they are more inclined to listen to their language radio stations, and we intend starting phone-in programs with this radio station, so that when one of our officials is on the radio explaining the NWRS, the community also has an opportunity to phone back and say their opinion, how they feel about the document. Lastly, Madam Chair, we would like the minister or the DG to go to various television programs and speak on the document. For instance, we are eyeing Morning Live, even though they tend to give you a very short time to express yourself. But we feel that the audience of most of these programs is critical towards the formation of the opinion on the document. We also intend approaching the Focus program. We also intend approaching ETV, negative as they are. In fact, they told us when we approached them for another engagement that they do not necessarily publicize what they call government positive service delivery stories. They told us they specialize on scandals, corruption, and when it comes to things like service delivery by a government department, they are not very keen. In a nutshell, Madam Chair, I think that is our perspective of how we intend marketing and publicizing our NWRS. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next presenter, I think your information is appetizing us, so that members, when they engage, they will engage properly. The next presenter.
Thank you.
the chair through you, if Fred Van Zyl introduce Mrs. getting this together, I hope I'm in fact asking to answer some of the questions, especially Ms. Galali. I was nudging him to answer earlier. I said no, it'll be covered in the presentation. So that is the time. So if it's not covered now, then my neck is on the block.
Honorable Chair, members, this is, if you have got page numbers, page 117, it's part 4.2. It's just after the previous, last week we presented the water situation. Remember the whole water balance and issues? It's just after that one. Part 4.2. Found the space. Part 4.2 investment framework. Honourable Chair, I
you may proceed.
May proceed. Thank you very much. I think the issue that I want to get back is because it's the last presentation for today. Is in the strategy when we talk about all of this, people say, what will it cost? What will it take to make it happen? And in this whole process, we decide that must be, we have to cost this. What does it take to make water management happen? And this is actually a logical question. So we decided to include it as core strategy 10, and the investment frame must be there for South Africa that everybody know what it will take. Do we have the money? Will we, where are we going to get the money from, etc.? So I hope that you, in first step, do you agree that we need that core strategy and product? Otherwise, we can't do the things. So I have to interview. So, we need a mandate, and I just want to quickly guide why are we doing it. And the first one is that National Treasury came to us and says, we're not going to give you more money. You know, we, every time we run to them, we want some money, we want some money. And they said, give me a perspective, give them a perspective of what is the animal, how big is your water animal, that we can logically think about how to allocate the water, how do you prioritize this water within this economic climate. And they actually put as a condition in our allocation that we need to give to them a perspective of A to Z of all the actions that we have, a logical thing. And I hope that you also agree with that logic. You also need to know that, to understand that. But it's interesting, when you get to the National Water Act, in Chapter 1 it says we need to have an investment plan. And we haven't done it. You know, we haven't done it, so we said, now you need it. But when we get to the strategy, we need to be able to cost it. And then, in this whole process, what is critical in the National Development Plan, which we was launched 2 weeks ago, and all the other areas, the growth path, etc., a lot of economic and social statements are being made. We want this, we want to double up that, we want to have 50% more irrigation. What are the water implications to make it happen? Where are we going to get the money from? So we need to sit back and say, can we respond? Are we able to respond? How? What will it take? And also the viability side. And especially on the socio-economic development, we have to rethink, because even when we spoke, it comes to, we want new infrastructure, the new infrastructure syndrome. Well, we have to go back and say, and as you stated, I don't remember, the functionality is a critical area. The infrastructure is there. Should we rather invest in operational maintenance and asset management and skills rather than new infrastructure? So we need to get that perspective, and then we decide to have this value chain, put things together that we don't build dams, no, the people don't get water. We build a community with no water. So we said, well, how do we put this picture together that you actually can zoom into your community like Bushbuck Ridge and say, where is the problem? So we thought, hey, that we've got a huge issue. So get the motive here that we have a whole logical tool that you also can interview and engage. And then we can actually make sure there's integrated delivery. When we build the work dam, the people will get water by default and also reprioritize. It's also about asset management. So if you understand the rationale. So when we designed the system and say, right, now we need the investment framework, we said it's not just about water infrastructure. Because we can build a dam, but what about water allocation reform? What about the communities? And we know that that's local government, or it might be water user association, etc. So we have to put the sector together to be a complete picture. I hope you agree with that rationale. And then very important, and I'm also glad, you asked about, are we wanting the outcomes? Are we working towards that outcome? We want to achieve better prosperity for people. So we want to have a system to make sure we achieve things at the end. If you don't have that system, and we take the lead what you said the last time, we have to start getting outcome folks, link the infrastructure to the outcomes. Are we benefiting? Are we getting the systems there? So in this whole process, the value chain, picture it, and we said this financial management as well. It's not at the financial model. We need to understand how we're going to fund it. Where's the money going to come from? It's not so what we need, but how. And then also important, it's not only about new infrastructure. How do we deal with refurbishment? And in the document you will find, the support document, that at least 30 to 40% of the money is for refurbishment. And some useful areas is 80%. So it's important that we have to have a massive investment in refurbishment actions. So, and then we said we want a tool that you can actually view it and see it. All right. So this is the context. Now, just to position this investment framework properly, we've got all these outcomes, and other outcomes, we've got a lot of programs, like the National Development Plan, the Energy Rural Development, etc. So we have developed the concept of the water strategy to respond to this. But in making this happen, we said the investment framework is there to make the strategy happen, but also to support and link up with all these other activities that we can see what is the water resource implications. So a visible model on this issue. So what we also want to say in the sector approach, there's a chapter on water resources. What will it take to develop water resources? We can split it into three areas. National water, the water affairs budget type of thinking with PCDA. Then we include new things, regional infrastructure, like we have put a desalination plant here in Cape Town, or Durban or area, Itiquini. But then we also have to think about local communities. What will it take to drill, borrow, or source for those communities in itself? You know, we tend to think big, but we also have to think small. So I think it's important that you appreciate it. But then we've got the value chain about the sectors going out there. That we need a mutual value chain. Agricultural chain, environmental one, industry, to make sure there's energy, etc., the mining side and the communities, but you also have to have the waste side, the pollution side to understand that. So the model is about doing that. So you also know this picture about the whole water cycle, so each scheme is being put together on that basis. All right. So some people, we thought we just included over above this academic side what I stated. There are real challenges out there that you know that we've got problems. We urgently need to address our water quality. I hope that you agree with that. We need the local government development, the basic services backlogs, the water use sector, agriculture, how we can support agriculture and water education reform, and sustainable management. And I thought I'd just introduce three or four pictures. This is a picture of all the national dams we're going to build. But only 30% of it is funded yet. We still have to get funding. Where is the money going to come from? And many of those dams, like the Letaba or Witwa Dam, is a social dam. And it's going for domestic purpose for the local municipality. It's going for 11 million for education, water education reform, and for the environment. Who's going to solve that from the economic side? It's a social issue of the government's decision making. So we have to understand how we're going to fund all these issues, and we don't have enough funds for that. So where are we going to do this? So it's our building that picture. We also have to think about the municipalities. It was also raised about all these rural communities. We cluster them into about 1,000 clusters. And that thing shows there, from the water resources side, that 28% of those communities got a water crisis at the moment. Water resource, not infrastructure. We have to go out and do something about their water security. Over and above, I'll show the infrastructure challenges out there. And I hope that also one of your questions, because you also do have a register of what is happening out there. So in the next picture, I want to show that we were on the bulk infrastructure. We went to all the municipalities to start putting a bulk requirement together. It's 172 billion rand that the municipalities ask us. Sanitation, internal, regional bulk. We don't have, our biggest only about 2.5 billion, is that right, 2.4 billion. We need 172 billion to make the bulk happen. So we actually sit like this and say we can't make it happen. But the big one is The question is on local government. Do we have a database on all our schemes? And honourable members, we're busy building an extensive database. We already classified all the local government schemes in 1,664 schemes. But we're also assessing all the communities as well. Every community, what is their situation? Every single, 40,000 of them. So just to get back to that situation, for these schemes, we found that at least 50% of these towns don't have anything to do with water meters or do water management or demand management. Nothing, nothing. So they just waste. So we have to deal with this. And the other challenge we have, the other picture is just my last picture on this side, is the condition of the infrastructure. You also have that functionality side. All these 160, 40%, 3% of them has got urgent refurbishment requirements. It's not working. 43%. Vandalism, stolen, broken pipes. I've got nice pictures about vandalism, about burned out stations, etc. So I thought, you also register, but I will use this as an example. If we don't cross this and investigate this, we will not be able to address it. So this is part of the strategy. Go back and do the basic things right. Go back. So let's get back to the key findings so far. I thought we jumped in and said, we don't want to say we want to give some results as well. So we've got an interim report. We are still working on the more detailed, but the interim findings, one. The present estimate that we need at least about 670 billion over the next 10 years. If you take it for every year, about 67 billion rand per year. Then we try to go out and find exactly how much money is coming into the total sector from his brother's side, from donor side, etc., etc. We find that it's about 33, so a billion. But that's optimistic because we assume it's being used for water. But we have got a major gap of about 50% if we don't have money for to make these things happen. And that's the core message. We've got a serious financial gap in funding. Now, the Treasury said no, and I know that we got back by 1% for this year, 2% said there's no more money. So we have to do two things. The one is we have to be smarter, stretch our infrastructure, and more prioritize. But the other side, we have to look at it in context. In the budget announcement this year, the President says 850 billion rand for infrastructure. How is that 850 billion, but there's only 20 billion for water? It doesn't make sense. We are skewed in terms of all the others. So somewhere there is money, but we have to reprioritize a bit on the government side as well. But we also don't say everything must come from the fiscus. We have to look at other opportunities as well. So this is the first one we say. And I think it's alarming because we've got expectations out there. And we have to live with this. So that's why we come up with internal service solutions, etc. But also look at how you stretch money by asset management and stop vandalism. And that's where the culture and value systems come in as well. But the other part of it, we have to invest in operation maintenance. We cannot go on like this and not investing in that. So that's another message. And then we went to the local government, the equal share. We actually found, theoretically, we went for all the financial statements of local government. And we found that actually, in theory, there is enough water and money. If they spend the equal share, they can actually do most of that operation maintenance. But they're not doing it. It's not being used. So we know that we have to refine this a bit. But we find that this is an area that, without asking a lot of money, we do proper accounting and financial management locally, we can actually stretch and do a lot of these operational meetings. So I thought it's just important that you get those messages through. Oh, sorry. All right. So the key message from the strategy, we have to double up our funding. We have to focus on operation maintenance. In this whole process, we have to change our mind and not only focus on infrastructure, we have to create new programs. We need to invest in wastewater management systems. We need to invest in water quality. We have to invest in infrastructure asset management, and we have to invest in demand conservation. And over above, we need institutional capacity and skills and a focus on this business. So, just on the financial basis, to get a feeling of this, Chair, I'll just rush through this now quickly, but the capital funding is 29 billion per year over the next 5 years. Now, we don't ask all that from Treasury, But the whole business, it's a debt financing. We have to sit down and look at how we can stretch this business. And that's where the strategy comes in, how we can do, survive this area and maintain this. But in operation and maintenance, I think we go to all these areas, some places like we go to the irrigation schemes and water associations. There we actually said 80% of the money must be applied for asset management, and we're not doing that. So otherwise we're not going to get the water for agriculture, and we're using a lot of water. So we need to start investing. But the other message for this committee is that we have to invest in other types of funding, social and environmental investment. How are we going to fund environmental protection? Who's going to sponsor it? Who's going to operate it from what fund? And it's, on social, I mean agriculture, you know, water is very costly. And this, we talk about 100,000 rand per hectare. Who's going to afford it? So the government's come up with smart solutions. How are we going to deal with this to enable this, this food and food security issues? So, but in making this, the institutional model is critical in making it happen, because if local governments are not viable, we need these reasonable utilities possibly to cross-subsidize. But we don't want to set them up for failure, because we need to cross-subsidize and have one foot in economic places that get cross-subsidized. So the smart thing about how to get stable funding is an institutional solution in a make way. The cash management, we have to deal with that, how they're going to help fund and be funding agents of this business. The water boards, etc. It's a whole financial issue about viability and these actions. And then the critical one is, if we don't invest in water conservation management, then we'll be actually lost in this whole process. In this whole process, I'm not going through this, but I think we do the CGTV. What will be the success factors, and we put up there, we need additional funding. We have to negotiate and be smart. We need more money. But the other side, we have to stretch what we have as well. And we have to look at other funding and other sources for maintaining systems. But we have to go to the private sector, and that's where you find core strategies as 11. Bring the private sector in, bring them in, make use of them. But we need political commitment. We have to force the guys to do proper financial management. We can't get away from that. And then the implementation, we cannot just talk about this now. We can talk the MTF for 3 years, and now we say after 3 years we can talk. If we don't do this, we can have a water potential crisis out there. So, but then we also said risk factors, it's just the opposite. There is a high risk that these things are not coming. And then we have to look at this, so we need a plan B as well. So that's why we put this in the strategy, let's deal with the situation. And there's other issues like antagonism against private sector. We don't want you here, we want this. And yes, there are possible solutions to use communities as operation maintenance, but then we need to build that capacity as well. But very important at the end, the capacity of the department to lead this process and drive it is a dynamic issue, because that's actually the critical area. Can we invest? And what we want to extend this is not, we don't only invest in infrastructure, we have to invest in people, institutional and management processes. All right. So conclusion. I think we have the decision point in financing. It's a critical success factor in the strategy. We need to have commitment in the banking society. Everybody must come aboard now and let us think about this. But we also have to install processes in local government that we don't have this new infrastructure solution syndrome. The consultants must change their attitudes and say, come back. This is one of the focus of operation maintenance. How far can we stretch what we have instead of putting new infrastructure, etc., etc. The capital investment, as I said, is in 29 billion. That is a must. But we estimate what should come from that. First question, we said about 17. The others we want to negotiate. But we also had to discuss with TCTA. They said they already find it difficult because they need security, international security, et cetera, from loans. And that's not forthcoming as well. So we had to take a very close risk in terms of how we secure this. And we have to sit down together. But as I said, you spoke about capacity building. We want to have put money where our mouth is to support this capacity institutional building. If we don't do this, we lost. We need that capacity. So we also at least start a kit for 1.8 billion for this per year. And the partnering with the financial institutions. So I thought I'd just jumping through the system. There are quite a few issues here, but I thought this is a critical area. And the idea is to talk about the strategy and DJ. I thought about raising those issues about the functionality. Because functionality is up there to make functionality happen, and we do database. But the idea is that you become aware and support us, hope that you support this action, this core strategy. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Frank Sansei. Members, I think if you have questions, it must be short and must be specific, because we've got now limited time. As we will be able, as the department have come here and give us the preliminary, because we will be having the public hearing, and then this, the, whatever that they have said, it will assist us. So, members, that is Kosana, me, Otesi, me, Wenga, and me, me Bengu. That is Kosana.
Chairperson, thank you very much. As we are listening to the presenters, it looks like we are starting a department afresh. Hence, we had a department before. What I can say, Chair, on the monitoring and information, the sharing between government and department, if there is a lack of information on this, was done deliberately so by those who are leading in the past. Because we can't have our resources not clearly reflecting in our data, which means the department is struggling to gather that data. Instead of adding what we have in the past, because it's not clear, that's why you are struggling to get the total data. But I should think we'll support you in dealing with that, because this is our government and it's our democracy, all of us. Because everything, it must be registered so that you can know exactly what is happening. Chairperson, I just want to comment on the funding in relation to investment infrastructure. Funding must be coupled with the revenue collection. We are providing water to different sectors, different people, different local municipalities. But in return, what are we getting? Very crucial. We're all relying on a grant from the treasury, $29 billion that was you are indicating here on the screen, and of which is incorrect, Chair. We must come up with a mechanism of ensuring that these sectors are paying what is due to the department. Well, that's what discussing here. We are almost at the end of the year. Next year, DG will be getting a disclaimer department because of such things. If they are not paying, they are still going to give us a problem. Really, we need to do something in assisting one another to make sure that everyone must pay what is due to the department. What you are consuming, that's what you must pay. And on the water sector capacity and capacity building, I just want to check the recruitment strategy for new staff members and the retention. Because we can't have a capacity building without knowing exactly our strengths and weaknesses and the retention and the new acquiring of staff members. And I get the strategy there and clarify the issue of internship, learnership, vis-a-vis and funding that you have in assisting in that regard. The experience, Chair, should think is an issue that is hindering the progress of delivery of this democratic government. In some instances, we want experience where the experience cannot be acquired. Particularly in the Department of Water, we've got less disadvantaged people who have got an experience, and you can't absorb them. Some, they don't have even this skill. The skill of water is very scarce. Therefore, when you are talking about the skills development, you must also check this issue of experience.
but also we must check and balance the two for the legacy on what we have as government. And Chair, I must say, the financial management and monitoring is very important. Whatever we're doing, we must make sure that we manage correctly. And how do we coordinate our affairs? That needs money. I know the DG office and the other staff, they are at national. But the grassroots, that's where we're suffering most, DG. That's where we're encountering problems as Department of Water. But anyway, this maintenance and new projects cannot go on if we're not managing properly on the ground. We're giving people projects free of charge. We are giving them equitable share at the end of the year, but there is nothing coming forward. Instead, when they have got a crisis of water on the ground, they will point to you and say, the National Department must assist the National, forgetting that equitable share. Chair, due to time factor, I'll just pause there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. I'll also try to be brief into the point, and most of the points members for Sana just said on them. We appreciate the fact that the department takes note of indigenous knowledge, that sometimes we have this perception that people do not have forever skills, and when it comes to rural communities, they do have that. And I'm happy that the department is taking that into consideration. Because if we don't do that, actually calling for migration into urban areas, and that's impact heavily on our social infrastructure. You know, the clinics, housing, schools, and whatever, all people will be going to the urban areas. And not most of them like the life in urban areas, but they're forced by circumstances to migrate to urban areas. But if you do take them into consideration, that will solve a problem to a large extent. And the skills development as well, we always talk about capacity. You can have all these good plans, these objectives, but if there's no capacity, nothing will be implemented. So also happy that it is taken into consideration, and we hope that within reasonable time, there will be some skills that will be drawn in to the department. The development of skills development. We are also happy that it covers all, the areas, classification of people in terms of their educational background, that you have those who only get skills, the knowledge thereof, and those who have academic, skills. We need all of those. So investment in skills is very important. This is why we always talk about the strategy to maintain these skills, to retain the skills, so that you don't, we don't lose them. And I think one of the strategies here is for the department to pay well and nurture, all the officials we have, because we need them, and without you, I don't think we'll be saying something, but also need capacity, the required capacity, the relevant capacity, not just capacity, because sometimes people are appointed with something that is not relevant for the department. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. Next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Mr. Fonsal has hit the nail on the head as far as the equitable share goes. There is not enough legislation or accountability by municipalities to use the equitable share what it should be used for. If municipalities did use it for the right reasons for water and electricity and infrastructure, we wouldn't be sitting in the situation that we are sitting with at the moment, because the equitable share I am aware of is used for a lot of nice to have instead of the right thing. And also, it is very important, I think, that if you need the extra information, that all that information is available, because each municipality has to report to province on a monthly basis of what they are doing, how they're going about it, all that. And so that information is available. If you need additional information that could be possibly included in that return form, which is on a monthly basis, so you don't have to actually deal with the municipalities. You can draw their data from the provincial government, so it will be available. And I think then you're not duplicating things, and it's the same form, same document, and you don't oblige municipalities to land up with this mountain of paperwork, which they are complaining about it at the moment. And as far as the attracting of skills, yes, we can attract skills. But I've also listened to a presentation from the South African Institute of Engineers. And they are complaining that they offered these services to SOGA, where they've got retired engineers, where they've got youngly, newly qualified individuals. They're offering the services, and nobody's taking them up on it. Why? The skills are there. They are available. The offer has been made. But we are just turning a blind eye to it. Could you please follow up on that?
Okay, thank you, Chair. On the operating and maintenance of the infrastructure, it was reported to this committee that there is a program of the unemployed youth that has been trained and employed by the department to fix leaking parts. So far, how many young people are being employed in that program? Thank you.
Fred, do you want to start in this? And then the others will come in on this. Those areas not related, so you can't handle.
Thank you, Chair. I think the first comment was very relevant in terms of financial management, cost recovery, and revenue management. What I refer to, I call it financial management, but I think that we have to use the right terminology. We have to do our financial management and cost recovery. And for that sake, we also busy, as part of the strategy, I did mention it, a tariff strategy, a financing model to deal with this whole value chain of how to deal with this. But the intention, I totally support that action. How are we going to make sure that people do pay for their services and that cost recovery? So I don't want to comment on that one. And then I think the others was about skills. That is something else I think is good.
With regards to the number of youths, I can't recall the figure, but I know the program was happening in Joburg. If I'm not mistaken, it's about 30, but I stand to be corrected. I can submit the actual figures. But the program has been focusing there, and as part of the water conservation, water demand, we are now expanding the program to also other areas, and the focus is also on youth. But maybe to indicate that issues of youth being employed is not only on water conservation. We do have other programs also. Like your adopted river that is also inclusive of youth employment.
Is all question answered? So if not, I think as I have already alluded, I said we will be having the public participation in this national water resource strategy too. We will even assist the department because we will be getting the information from the public that will enhance the strategy that we are talking about today. It will be, it's also useful today because we have received the synopsis from the department that will make us that when we have this public hearing, we'll be having the know-how, what is the department planning versus what we will be hearing from the community or the public itself. So I must say up to here, I thank you as department and honorable members for this successful meeting. If it was not you, this meeting couldn't be successful. So carry on like that even in future. Thank you. The meeting is officially adjourned.
You know this chapter is new.
So it's like everything. The last word, you want to say something?
Thank you, Chair. I should have spoken before you. But it's equally to thank you, Chair. Even the absent chair, Mr. Delano, we communicate and just according us this opportunity even to finish what didn't finish last week.
it's a learning exercise for us as well. I too learn. I might be at the top, but the every day you learn, the dealing with stakeholders and the oversight ones like yourselves, the questions that are asked, sharpen us. For the, on behalf of the minister who's not here, who I'll meet shortly, a few minutes, it's, I would like really to thank you wholeheartedly for your supportive role, and that we're able to engage with yourself right at the beginning of the public participation process. The members who are here, team members, this is a team that makes it happen. We're dispersed, there are different engagements. Some are developing our strategy right now in Gauteng and the annual performance plan. Others here who were here, who saw them living, are preparing the annual report. These processes feed to that. It's an experience as well to for public participation and engagement, so that it's not only the DGs or the friends or the whoever who you've seen before, the others get to be seen, that they too know, very knowledgeable about it. So thank you very much, Chair.